that situation gave me the ability to jump out, to do something bloody scary, scarier than climbing a freezing mountain up here. Yeah, I've been through a lot of like life or death situations from extreme sports, but that conversation with my dad just tops all of that to say like I need to do my own thing now.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali.
It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to meet you.
Welcome to my podcast.
Now, welcome to another episode of our Dying to Meet You. And today we have someone that I have actually attended a very short course with you, and I thought it was so amazing what I've gone through. Within a short frame of time, I was able to do something unbelievable. Unbelievable to hold my breath for 2 minutes and about 30 plus seconds in just a short session. And I thought I have Chun today with me. He is the man who teaches us how to do breath work as well as the Wim Hof method, if you have not heard of it. Welcome to our show, Chun.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, so maybe just for the audience to understand, what is Wim Hof, and then why does breathing exercise come into play as well?
Wim Hof is from Netherlands, and so he created a method through his own life's ups and downs to be able to become healthy, happy, and strong just from simple protocols with breathing exercises and cold water immersion.
Cold
And
water, yes.
after a few decades of experiences, Guinness World Records and all these, what he has now is a very simple to follow protocol that you have experienced in a
Yes.
very simple short lesson to see how we can use stress as a training tool to make ourselves more resilient, to go into more relaxation, get deeper sleep. So a whole ton of benefits. Yeah. On the surface, that is.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and you've done Wim Hof. You personally went into to Netherlands, right? You said to learn
Yeah.
from him.
I started with an online course actually. So 10 weeks of training, but I was lazy, so I took about 6 months to finish a 10-week course. And then after that, I wanted to know more because they said, oh, let's do a cold shower. So I went to my toilet, I put the water to cold, and it's like, eh, nothing, what's going on? And then I was kind of disappointed because our cold water is 29 degrees or something.
Yes.
So I had a winter trip planned, and that was when my friends heard me screaming from the toilet at night and they realized, oh my God, this guy's bathing in ice cold water in winter time. And but when I came out of the shower, I was just in my towel walking the living room. Everyone was in multiple layers. I was like, okay, this is nice. This is, I feel kind of powerful. Maybe this is what it's about. But it was still a big question mark. So that led me to asking, okay, what more can I do? Where can I learn? And they said, like, oh, there's an academy program to become an instructor. Otherwise, there's no
Yes.
one teaching in
Yeah,
Singapore.
this definitely. In fact, the first time I started doing cold shower, I think for 3 years now. 3 years, ever since there was a show on Netflix by Gwyneth Paltrow, right?
Yeah, Good Lab.
Yes. And then that was when I first saw about Wim Hof. And actually the first time, I'm so sorry, Wim Hof, if you're listening. It would be great if you listen, you know. Then I thought this guy is crazy. You know, like the first few seconds of the screen, it's like, wow, this guy, has a long beard and like very unkempt tie. It's like crazy to jump into like ice lake or something. But when Gwyneth Paltrow shared about her son is also practicing it, then I thought, okay, why not? It's harmless to try. Of course, the first day, you just always think about, oh, cold shower hitting your body, and then you just like have this like you want to flight, right? You just want to run away, or like, okay, just turn it up to hot water. But what I realized about Singaporean, and I spoke to a few friends, and I thought we are crazy too in Singapore. They say that your weather is so hot, and you turn your air con to like the coldest, and then when you take a shower, you take a warm shower. So they couldn't connect. It's like, why do you not take cold shower in such a hot weather? But I think your experience, even just doing that breath work, and even though it was just a short session with us, but that particular exercise, I remember when you did the first part, it was like, okay, hold your breath. And I remember just holding like maybe 20 over seconds. I have to, I'm so embarrassed, but I start to panic, and also I have a bit of an asthma background, so I was like, oh, I need to breathe, I need to breathe, okay, breathe, and then, but throughout the short session, I think just to be able to hold a breath for 2 minutes plus, I think Eugene also have a bit of a taste to it just now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I'm going to try later on.
Yes.
I think at best I can only hold my breath for like 45 seconds.
Yeah. Well,
that's quite decent.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you hold 45. My God, mine is like 20. It's like, okay, breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's something that we want to explore, you know, maybe if there's something that we can do at the end, I think that would be
sure,
good for
easily.
Our audience. But please do not do it in the water. I remember this. I think Chun can share later on. So maybe you can share a little bit more what you do and then how do you get into this Wim Hof. There must be a trigger point other than, you know, wrapping yourself in the towel and coming to discover that. It's like, oh, ding!
A lot of different things eventually led me towards where I am now, good and bad. I would say more of the bad things. If life was easy and no problems, I wouldn't push myself to change something. Yeah. So accumulation of a whole bunch of different things, starting with basically how hot it was all the time, and there were nights in bed I was just perspiring. I was like, oh man, I need another cold shower to bring my temperature down so I can get to bed. So that was one thing. An ice bath shouted out to me. It's like, hey, this just skips that whole 20 minutes of tossing and turning in order to get that temperature drop to doze off.
Yeah.
So that's definitely one point. Another point was inflammation. So this was something I have a kind of a reaction from my body when I push too much, either too little sleep or too many activities or a combination or stress. My body's unique way of telling me enough is enough is through inflammation. And this actually feels like rheumatoid arthritis or gout, where parts of my body will just get inflamed with redness, painful swelling. And so blood tests all showed that I was totally fine. No arthritis, no gout, nothing wrong with my system. But it just kept coming back. So after a while of prodding, it was a naturopath that told me this was my body's reaction of saying, you need a break. And because I ignored the simpler, smaller signs like a yawn, like a sneeze, when I ignored that over and over again and still kept pushing because I was like late 20s, early 30s, you know, life was a roller coaster and then everybody's like, let's do this, let's go there, let's do that. So I just like, wow, I have a lot to keep up with. A lot of people expect things out of me. So let's go with it. Let's ride that roller coaster.
Yeah.
And in that ride, I just saw that this was the body's reaction when things got a bit too much. But I'm not sure if it's ego or responsibility or some kind of mask that I have to put on that wasn't fully myself, that I kept doing that regardless of what the body was pleading me for. So the inflammation returned, and one of Wim Hof's videos did mention stopping inflammation, or at least putting it in its place. And that was very tempting for me to find out in my, you know, adventure explorer mode. One of these things that I constantly put myself up to is to always learn from new directions, new teachers, new masters and senseis. And not all of them are correct because my body wouldn't listen to every single teacher out there. But I would cherry pick what works best for me. So Wim Hof was the next teacher in line to show me something that I've overseen or overlooked, or that something this man has done through decades of pushing and suffering and perseverance, mind over body stuff, that he took the essence of what was important to share it with us so that we don't have to go through what he did. Through the pain and all that, it was prodding me towards finding what's the next solution. This one didn't work. CrossFit didn't work. Yoga didn't work. What's next?
Yes.
Nutrition, that's difficult. To pinpoint exactly what the body needs, or it's an expensive solution. We have to buy bottles and bottles of supplements.
Absolutely.
Week after week. So when the method showed up, it was almost like a perfect meeting point in that place and time where the solution and the problem just met each other.
Nice.
And so I was like, oh, this seems to cover all the bases. Let's try it out. To be honest, I did not cure the problem. It still exists within me. And this was something, actually a healer called Sue, who was operating around the corner mm-hmm. here. She shared with me that...
The chiropractor?
No. Sue was a sound healer. Gong, sound baths and all that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Her partner does hand pans.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had a chance to meet her, and she comes, her lineage is all healers. Her grandmother was a healer as well. Her grandfather, I think. Yeah, so what was interesting in this chance meetup was she shared how pain and suffering leads to your strengths that you have down the road.
Pain and suffering lead to your strength. Okay.
Without that, you wouldn't be prodded to better yourself, to solve the problem. And once it's solved, you then have that power. But you wouldn't have that power if the pain and the discomfort didn't start in the first
place. Yep.
Like I said, if life was smooth, nothing would push you to change things. And you just slowly melt into this soft, useless lump.
Yeah.
So... Just like our spine, we need the stress of gravity to maintain the muscle to stay upright.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people, astronauts come back from space, they have to be on a wheelchair for a few months.
Yeah.
So what was shared to me was that pain, or at least in my case, the pain from my inflammation becomes my strength to help others. And this goes into a whole different story about almost the supernatural. That's very interesting for me to see how breath work kind of open up a view of what makes me who I am and how my pain gave me my power as well.
I really like that because, you know, today I even was listening to not a podcast, but a book, audio book, and it talks about a lot of times... You don't know your value until you're being challenged with that. So you don't know what's your value until someone else presented a value that's not you, right? So example, like this guy who was a GE, he was the youngest vice president. And then he knew he shouldn't work with the company because he was asked to hide certain details from the board. And he said, oh, I'm not going to stay here even though I get paid a lot of money because that's against his value, which is integrity. So I think that's the part where you mentioned something really, really powerful, which is, you know, you do, when you know your pain, and then that's how you know your strength. I think that part is, that's why the low point and the highest point is so important, right? A lot of times people say, oh, why do I keep, whenever people say, why does this always happen to me? Why does this always happen to me? You know, challenge yourself to change that thought, the mind. Perhaps your breath work will help so that, you know, how do you react to things? During the breath work exercise that I did with you was, what is your natural instinct? For me, what was my natural instinct, which is, you know, to be very nervous and I want to fly within 20 seconds. I said, okay, stop breathing, man. And then that could be the mind. But when you train us and then through your explanation, then you realize, hey, actually, our body is so capable to do a lot more things than we thought. Right, and I think that's very, very powerful. So even though you say that it didn't help very much, like with your inflammation, what changed for you after you went through Wim Hof? Because you, by far, is still the only trainer for Wim Hof, right?
The only active trainer. After me, two more people got certified in Singapore. So one's a psychologist, but he mainly does retreats. Another is my own student. He is so interested that he's now a certified trainer.
So you do this full time, I would say.
Only last year.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
I was side hustling it for about 2.5 years. Yeah, and then more things in my life's journey started like highlighting, like, hey, push and pull factor, basically. Something was pushing me away, something was pulling me in, and then I just decided, okay, let's see how uncomfortable where I was will become, and how enticing doing this full time attract me, and just sit and wait, because the chiropractor recommended a book by Mark Allen who just said, like, things will happen to you at the right time and the right amount of intensity. Wait for it and be ready to ride that opportunity. It's like, oh, okay, I don't need to force, I just wait. And then into that journey, then one day you're like, ding, okay, now's the time.
Yeah. What were you doing before?
I work with my parents. They've been doing marine equipment manufacturing and sales for and distribution for since 82.
Oh wow.
So until now, from a one-man show to a solid team that's still ongoing through like I don't know, they've been through probably 3 recessions or something. Yeah. So to me, it gave me a very solid foundation of understanding what Never Say Die really means, what the school of hard knocks that people born in the early years before independence.
Like PG, not the strawberry generation.
Yeah, yeah. Grew up understanding what being poor was really like.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so it gave me a very good understanding of what that style of business is like. So I was basically lost. I just go with the flow, right? You want me to go to JC, you want me to go to uni, you want me to get a degree. Okay, let me see what's okay. I got now what? Okay, let's work here and see. And then I was just basically waiting for something to show up in my life that said, this is probably what you should be doing, or this is what you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So just wait for those signs to appear. So within this journey, those signs appeared for me.
So you must be a really good son. Because, like, you follow whatever they want, right? I mean, like, you know, to follow the path. Okay, JC, okay, uni. But how do they feel? Are you still active with them in the business, or are you taking a back seat now?
I officially left about a year and a half ago. Honestly, one of the most difficult conversations I've had to have with them, because this is something not just affecting my drive to bring myself into another position that holds a lot of meaning,
sure,
but directly attacking my guilt of being an unfilial son. These are like things that are like, oh, you are now coming in to take over this and that, this is your responsibility, we can retire. These are all the things that's been hovering over me for 11 years to not leave. No matter how tough it got.
Wow.
Yeah. So the day to sit down and to face my father, I was tearing inside everything. Speaking about it now, I'm getting a bit shaky already.
Yeah.
So that situation gave me the ability to jump out, to do something bloody scary. Scarier than climbing a freezing mountain half naked. I've been through a lot of like life or death situations from extreme sports, but that conversation with my dad just tops all of that.
Yeah,
I need to do my own thing now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing this very heartfelt. I think what resonated with me was, we being in a family business. So I didn't work with my dad, never a day in his life. Mm. I only came into the business after he passed, right?
Yeah.
And there was a point in time where I have to decide. I think the decision was also, and I realized how father figure is so powerful with us that, I think kids, and you use the word guilty, we just want to make them proud, right? I think as children, we just want to make them proud. We want them to feel like, okay, I'll do whatever it takes to help you. But is it really what we want? So my struggle, and when you share that, I could even feel that part of, difficulty in you. It was also the difficult time for me when in 2010, I came back. Because I was actually kicked out of my dad's business. My mom wanted me out.
Mm.
The irony is my mom didn't want me in the funeral business because she is... Yeah, so most people will want the kids to run, but no, my mom said, go do something else, right? And when I came back in 2010, it was also very difficult with her because we were quarreling so much. So for you to be able to work with your parents, I think it takes a lot. For me, isn't that my mom wasn't a good person or whatever. It was just that her idea was she wants to protect her daughter. She didn't want her daughter to go through this because funeral industry is difficult for women, right?
Yeah.
Back then, right? So I remember just having that conversation, making that decision to say, I think it's enough is enough. I need to let go. And that part of letting go was so painful because I felt even though my late father is no longer here, but just not holding on to his brand. Holding on to his name, because his company name is Ang Yew Sing Funeral Parlor. I felt like I wasn't a filial son, a child, right? And I think when you share, the same guilt, we feel, like, are we going to not make them proud? But kudos to you to really take that step, because I know some friends of mine, they still struggle to be honest with the parent and that, look, I want to do my own things. But how did that conversation went for you with your dad?
To be honest, coming to that point was the cumulative effect of the whole practice in the first place.
Mm.
So what I've seen happen to my own conversation with myself through the years was when I do the breathwork practice, it forces me to ask myself, like, how am I doing? Is this really what I want? You can start to see how the connection is. So every time I hold my breath, the conversation inside me goes, can I push or should I stop? I think I can push a bit more. Ooh, I better stop now. These are all the things going in my head. There's an angel and devil going, come on, push, show them you can do it. And then the other one goes, I think you're going to die. You better stop now, otherwise you die. I'm going to take care of you. Just give up now and everything will be okay. So repeated practice forces my mind to constantly pick up the phone, call deep in, because there's always a little voice inside that says the right thing at the right time. But whether this silly meat sack listens to it is another problem. A good example is like you need to sleep, but you've got 3 meetings and a dinner party. But you know your device tells you you've only got 3 hours sleep. Should you really be doing this? Your heart rate skyrocketing. So we ignore that voice. So this practice gave me repeated chances to listen to that voice. So by the time it came for a difficult conversation, I know what that voice wants. And I know that ignoring it will make others happy, but is that worth ignoring that inside voice? And so however difficult the conversation had to be, in the end, it had to be done. Otherwise, the voice would just get louder and louder. It will just keep pushing me away from them, or something else will pull me into what I really want naturally. And it's just a matter of pressing the button, pulling the trigger. Is this the moment? And then like, when the moment came, I guess the training prepared me one way or another to say, if this is the God-honest truth, then so be it. Accept the consequence. You might upset people. In the end, you're being true to yourself, and that authenticity to me is a lot more precious than faking it for the sake of others to say, I'll do this for you, I'll do that for you, because that's what you want for me and not what I really want for myself. So how long can I write that? That was a question for basically 11 years.
You know, it's so powerful about my practice was through meditation, Vipassana meditation, and I went for it. And when you talk about the inner voice, actually all of us, so I always describe like we are all an onion, right? And we're born with an inner voice. We are born when we are young. We know, maybe as a kid, you know, we have no fear and all that. But it's over the years where people say, oh, be careful. Oh, don't do that. You know, you shouldn't do that. Then you start to layer yourself with so many layers of like protection. Then very often my own exercise, maybe before I don't do the breath work, but I do the Vipassana. What was very powerful for me was I always ask myself, is this the inner voice or is this noise? Is this other people's noise? And I learned to listen what was my inner voice. And it took years to practice that, because it's not like one day you feel like, oh, okay, you know, and it takes years to, and I'm still learning to understand, is this my own voice? Is this the inner gut? And you can feel it, right? Because you point to the gut area, the stomach area, where, that's why we call it gut instinct. And that's your inner voice, right? And don't ignore that. So the more you don't ignore that, the more they get stronger and more powerful. And that's what I understand from my own practice, that the inner voice is your gut. That's why sometimes you feel like, oh, I have a gut feel, I need to do this. But if you keep ignoring it, they get weaker and weaker. And then your worried mom, which is the noise and the mind, will start to like, you shouldn't do it. You said the devil and the angel. Yeah. And I thought that was very, very, very truthful and very authentic sharing, because to really to step away for 11 years, so 11 years, you've been probably struggling to like, hey, how should I face this day? But it grounded you with the breathing exercise to know that whatever your dad share, and you use the word accept, and whatever, you know, it what the outcome is, you accept, and you're not in denial, you don't flight, you know, don't flee the situation.
More like I waited 11 years for the situation to fester and I gather enough ammunition. I can't go to war without doing my planning. So I had to like assess the situation. Where are my possible escape routes? How much ammunition do I have when they counter? So if I would say I jumped at the first chance, right? I probably would have failed badly and come out totally lost in the world. So waiting that time is not like a should I have done this or that? The situation just built up in a very natural way.
Yes.
That by the time I put the trigger, everything else was more or less laid out.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew that when I jumped ship, it was pretty much smooth sailing, not so much starting from scratch. Yeah, it was a very natural build up one way or another. It's not like, okay, I'm gonna do it tomorrow. Oh,
true.
My god.
Yeah. So are you the only child?
Or no, I have two siblings.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, I guess, you know, sometimes not sometimes, I think what you share, I love that Angel and Devil, even in breath work, I also witnessed them when I was doing the session with you, that one of them keeps saying, oh, come on, give up, man. And then I love how you share, one of the exercises was having a third person watching and then using that third person to say, it's okay, you'll be fine, don't worry. And that was powerful for me. Yeah. And maybe later we can do a glimpse of that. So sharing, because you mentioned, like, you know, earlier on, that was that, would you consider that as sort of your lowest point, having to, you know, talk to your dad, and did it help you to get to your highest point?
My lowest point was about maybe 7 to 8 months before the talk.
Mm.
I was driving home from work, crying in the car.
Oh.
And I was thinking, oh my god, the overwhelming responsibility of what I'm supposed to do is just do this next, do this next, do this next. Today I accomplished this. And then next, and this. And then day after day, year after year, it just went more and more. It's like, oh crap, this is never ending. Where was this bag of gold they were promising at the end of the rainbow? Mm-hmm. Then this rainbow seems so far away. It's like, oh shit, is this a 30-year journey? I'm in year 10. Ooh, 20 more years of crying in the car, I don't think. Ooh, am I ready for this? As parents, my parents are my role models of how to behave, how to act as a grown-up, as a business owner. But when I see them, I was like, ooh, do I want to be 70 and slogging it out every Monday morning? And Sunday nights are the worst because I have to work tomorrow. That was something after a decade I realized, this is not a nice feeling.
Mm.
I want to be someone that goes like, oh my god, tomorrow is Monday.
Mm.
I really wanted that, to have that sensation. And it just went further and further away. Oh. So the thought of like going to the office was not fun. Things had to be done, but when my heart wasn't there, the effort just went crappy anyway. So you can see it in the results. Like my mind was always somewhere else.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was a kind of direction. Yeah. Crying in the car was just a big sign for me. Like slowly building up, lah. Then the last drop, I just broke down. And said, okay, this is not right for me. And so then began my gathering of ammunition to see, okay, if I stop this, what's next?
Mm.
Why do they want me to do this? What is behind their expression of making me do this work? What is the real reason? And so I did a lot of digging to see, like, okay, what is it like from their perspective, coming from poverty to finally having some assets to give that sense of safety and, you know, survival being taken care of. And I realized all this action, no matter negative or positive, supporting or annoying, was for my survival, because it's their survival strategy that worked for them, that put them out of a very nasty space. And so the only way they figured their children could do it the same way is pretty much follow what they did. And, you know, once you're in a different generation growing up, like, I didn't experience poverty. I grew up in a nice space. I grew up with so many things to do and toys to play, stuff like that. So to me, the whole idea of struggle hard, suffer through, and then grab your bag of money and that's your safe, that does not connect with me at all, because it's not something I've ever faced, which I think most middle class or above people would not face in Singapore. And on one hand, I'm very lucky to be able to have that option. On the other hand, it's that guilt trip, like, oh, in order for me to, the idea of doing something you love wasn't even something my parents can fathom. Like, what is this passion thing? No, you shut up, you stop doing your hobbies, do serious work, suffer just for 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you can do what you enjoy. So that was the message given to me. It's like, really, yeah? That's
your message?
Monday, I just, for Monday to Friday. And then evenings and weekends, I just, a little bit.
Yeah.
And then just repeat for 30 years. And by the time I can really enjoy myself, I'll be about 55 years old. Mm. Really, yeah? Like that. So that message just caused me to just doubt the whole sequence of events that was laid out in front of me. I follow this well-paved road, no matter how
reluctant you
weird
are,
a direction it seems to be going, or just there's a forest path I might hack my way through, but at least it's my path.
What about your highest point, would you say?
My highest point? My mom made me do this very interesting exercise to say, how much do I think I need to survive in a month if I were completely on my own? So I just, let's try that. If I were not living with them and had my own house, vehicle, savings, holidays, and I came up with a number.
Yeah.
All right. Based on however I was living my life then. I was like, that's, I guess, what I need. And if I were to be on my own, I have to hit that amount.
Mm.
And I just remembered that number and just toss that paper away and just carry on life, and then started Wim Hof method on the side. One day I was looking through the monthly income, and then it hit that number, and then like this note from 3 years ago, like, hey, oh my goodness, the time has come. And so I just like rolled with it until one day the number matched, and I realized this is a sign that I can kind of survive on my own. And to let my parents know that I can survive on my own, suddenly the overwhelming push for working the family like quietened down a bit, knowing that the underlying reason for well-being and survival was taken care of. So basically for them, it's out of love. Out of love, like I love you, I need to take care of you, but maybe the expression is different. The expression is work for a family business. Work hard. Ignore what you love and enjoy. Work hard. Get the money. And that is love.
So
I cannot fault them, because without that, they wouldn't be where they are right now.
Absolutely.
At the same time, I cannot follow that because I didn't grow up that way. It doesn't connect as strongly as it did for them.
True.
So for me, when that number matched one day, I was like, I think this is a sign I can branch out on my own. It's going to be tough because I wouldn't have their direct support. I'm literally the first one, the only one doing this here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you the first sibling or the first child to say?
I'm the youngest.
Oh, you're the youngest.
Yeah.
So you have two of your siblings, older siblings, still supporting the family business.
No.
So
They found their own path very early on. They're born in the 70s, so I think they do value their independence as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So first chance they got, and I guess my parents are like, we got one more, okay.
can go. So you thought like we can like diversify the risk, but no, all three children. They pin the hook
but
on you.
To be honest, it's a tough industry.
Of course, yeah.
If you look at anyone right now and say, would you wanna get oily and sweaty and get into this line where you're just haggling, negotiating?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this the lifestyle for you? Having grown up in Singapore and experienced all these things, I think it's difficult for people to say yes, unless the remuneration was very attractive, or some other reason, like I can't escape my family's clutches.
the passion. I think, you know, like the industry, like our parents were brought up with, as long as find a job that you can, you know, feed you or you tie fan one, right? They always say iron rice bowl. But yeah, then you come to our era is more like, let's pursue something that makes sense or passion. And then of course now the younger generation is, be an influencer. That's the easiest source of money, right? Yeah, just, you know, do some dance on TikTok and all that. I often ask myself, you know, if I'm born in the new era, whether I could live my life the way it should be, but because I struggle with the TikTok era, right? But I guess, you know, I also told my husband, I said, like, he was saying to me, like, let's put our girls to gym, gymnastics. And then I said, please stop putting your dream to our daughter, because he always wanted to, he has the physique of a gymnast. And he's been asked before, why don't you explore being, you know, to do gymnast? And he wanted to, even like when he was an adult, but just now he doesn't have the time. So he's been telling me like, oh, don't want dance, you know, bring her for gymnast. It's like, yeah, but that's your dream, not her dream, you know. Let her find out what she wants. I think that's our generation, I think our us being parents will be more, you know, liberal in the way that pursue what the children want, because our parents probably didn't give us that kind of luxury. Some of the, you know, first generation, second generation. This is, sometimes I think about my mom, she's a little bit unusual as a parent, you know. Even when we were growing up, she was always telling me, don't depend on your husband. Even though she refused to admit that she says this to me. She said, no, I didn't say don't rely on your husband. Don't rely on anyone. I said, no, ma, you said husband. Okay, and then she always drilled that into me. And I think we all have our own blueprint, you know, our background, financial blueprint, our family blueprint. And it, whatever happens, you know, I think any setback is always for us to learn and learn more about ourselves. And I think that breathwork meditation or whatever form that makes sense to us really could help us to find out what's our inner voice and what do we truly want. And I love that word you say, authentic. Yeah, always be the authentic self, because if you're going to be the version that other people want you to be, you will never live life authentically. You will feel, you wake up dreading to go to work and hating life. And I think mental wellness is such a big topic that I often discuss with Eugene about and with any of my guests. But, you know, being our podcast, dying to meet you is also relevant to my work. So, of course, I do have to ask you that question of farewell. Have you ever thought about farewell? How you want to be remembered? Or when the day comes, if it's your farewell, have you even pondered about this word of funeral? What your farewell will be?
Actually, quite frequently. A lot of what my ego told me in the past was to be so special and so awesome that when it's time to go, it's a huge celebration. I touched so many people's lives. They've come like, oh, we've had so many good times together. And that would be what that farewell would be like, celebrating whatever interactions we've had, good and bad, together. And quite a few times in my adventures, I've come close to quite a bit of danger. Like there was a point where a skydiving trip, a landing didn't go that well. So I was supposed to land in an open area. Okay. I kind of froze last minute and went straight for a barbed wire fence. And just as I was about to land, my mind was like, ooh, is this it? Am I going to get mangled? What's the hospital trip going to be like? Is that literal, like, last minute flash, everything just within 2 seconds. And then for some reason, just before I hit it, I pulled on the toggles, the parachute lifted slightly, and my butt just grazed the top level of the fence, and then I landed. And for me to have that split second moment, it's like, ah, is this it? Really gave me a nice, I don't know, zoom out of the whole situation and got me questioning life, which, to be honest, I think is very necessary.
Yes.
And then, yeah, many other times, like diving deep where some mola was enchanting me with her eyes, and then I realized, oh my goodness, I'm at 55 meters on a single tank, the decompression, all that. Okay, but again, a quick flash. Ooh, is this it? Is the mola just gonna drag me into the depths in a down current? So many times. So every time, actually, one of the more serious ones was on a Wim Hof expedition where we were hit by a snowstorm.
Oh God!
And so quite a few got hypothermia, but everyone made it back safely. But during the point we were hit the hardest, just wearing shorts and like bare skin exposed. And we needed to turn back, and everything started going haywire. Yeah. So the sensation of the thinking brain shutting down, the survival reptilian brain kicking up and saying, like, you might die here. This is you better make it back. And again, the brain's like, ooh, is this it? What's the whole thing gonna look like? How's it gonna pan out? So every time it happens, it's like the world stops and then I'm forced to zoom back up. This is where, and last week, last year, last month, group baby, and then just look at the whole thing.
Wow.
Like, ooh, what's that like? How's this journey been? Is this okay? I guess I'm okay to go. But if I don't go, it'll be still all right.
Wow. So,
every time it happens, whoa, okay. But okay, you're back.
That's like, oh my
so it's like
God.
A safe game. Continue or quit. I was like, okay, oh, quit, continue. Wow. And then we make it back. Everyone's okay, happy.
Yeah,
by the back of the mind, it's almost like a muscle memory already. Mm-hmm. Every time something, is this it? driving also in Singapore is always like hectic, right? Suddenly jam brake. Is this it?
I think there's a lot to say about the zoom out.
Hmm.
Has that ever changed the way you do things? Did that help you to say, okay, this is how you wanted to be authentic? So, the fact that you had this zoom out moment, that also helped you to say things like, yeah, I want to do the things I love and not.
Of course, this is the only way that can, I would say that I would convince myself to do something scary.
Mm.
Like, if everything were to end in a few hours, would you still sit back and say, no lah, thanks for inviting, but no lah, I don't want lah.
Mm.
So that kept me pushing and going. But that was also the source of my inflammation and problems, which then became the source of my strength for teaching and guiding.
Beautiful.
So would I be right to say I shouldn't have done any of that? Or should I just say it's all my perspective of things, good and bad? So one thing I constantly tell myself is like, life always presents a challenge. And then when something appears, it's usually slightly out of my comfort zone, therefore a challenge. And it's a reminder to see, like, just to check in with myself. Do I have the acquired skills to overcome this? If I don't, I'll fail the challenge. And that challenge will remind me what I need to empower myself with to level up next.
Mm.
So that when it appears again, I know what to do to conquer it.
Mm.
The sad thing is, once I've conquered it, the next challenge will be looming around the corner. Slightly bigger, slightly tougher.
Yeah.
But that's how I see it as leveling up.
Yeah.
So every failure becomes a reminder. Every success is like, okay, you are where you need to be. Uh-huh. Get ready for the next one.
Yeah.
It will be tougher than this.
Oh, wow.
It's like, oh boy, here we go. So every day, every year is just going to get more and more interesting because sadly, our brain can absorb so much. So it's just a matter of time where we find ourselves. I guess if you're pessimistic about it, it's never-ending suffering.
Mm.
It's challenges after challenges. Oh, I thought I settled this debt and now we all got cancer. Oh, I thought settled, cancer's gone. Now the business is crashing.
Mm.
So you can look at it like, oh, my life is just shitty all the time. Or you can just say like, oh, I'm given so many opportunities to level up compared to when I was in my 20s.
Mm.
Lots of time, loss of energy, but totally useless in so many things.
Absolutely.
Now, 10, 15 years later, hey, actually, I have a lot of skills because of these challenges over and over again. Now you give me anything else, like I would look at it and like, that's not that bad. I think we can do it.
Exactly.
And the ability to say that can only come from suffering that you have gone through.
Yeah. I think it was, the fact that I always tell, I shared this in my previous podcast, that I think the most rewarding word that my mom, phrase that my mom ever said to me was, I'm not worried about you because every time you fall, you pick yourself up.
Mm.
And she said it to me when I was 30. I think that's the best thing as a parent we can do for our kid, you know, that they gone through adversity and they strengthen themselves. I think it's like building muscles, right? Mental muscles or that after one challenge, like, yeah, I have the muscles to fight a next challenge or to level up, and what can I learn from this new challenge? I think that's constant learning and nobody ever stops learning. I think the minute you shut your mind to say, oh, why does this always happen to me? You shut your mind to allow opportunities to come in or, to allow attracting all the positive energy because you just shut yourself up. So I wanted to ask, like, for your funeral, will you think people should have an ice bath? Everybody's soaking ice bath in your memory. Like, let's do, you know, recently a guy who's a dancing instructor. So everybody danced in front of his author area.
Yeah.
So yeah, they did. So I think the industry, I think people start to embrace a celebration, and which is what you said. You know, do you think people will celebrate that way? Or I'm sure in your line of work, your students would have come to you and tell you how much what you're taught help them in their life, personal life, family life, and even business, and just finding that authenticity. Like, have you thought about how you want everybody to be or behave at your funeral?
Oh, for sure, celebration. Like music, lots of like food, oysters, uni.
Yeah, uni.
A lot of the... spend all the money, feed everyone well, and just play slideshows of all the awesome video clips that we took on TikTok and all that. Just a big replay. It's like, that was fun. Let's keep that spirit alive. Because I think what makes like a true legacy stay is not that person's 80-year lifespan, but what's left behind. And like, if Wim Hof were to die now, I don't think the method will die for another 200-300. It will just keep going stronger and stronger because it speaks to so many people. But in order for that to become where it is now, he had to suffer through decades of mockery and people laughing, oh, this stupid clown just jumping in the cold water, what's he up to again? So, as nice as living authentically sounds, I would have to embrace the criticism, the consequences for stepping out of line as well. Because it's so easy to sit back on my armchair and say, I don't think you're doing it right. You're a stupid, look at your stupid face. So for me to dish that out as unpopular opinion is very easy, and we have no shortage of that. So for anyone willing to say, this is my true voice, I'm being authentic, this is the way we should live our life and die and celebrate, I have to accept that naysayers are going to come and just point fingers and say, oh, what the hell do you think you're doing? You can't do this here. So, pros and cons. You got to be a bit, like for me, I learned how to grow a bit of a thick skin to say, like, I'm doing something weird. If it's not for you, turn around, go somewhere else. But if it's what you love, come and join this little village of weirdos. And after this village grows, you'll be the weirdo for being outside the village. So that's...
I love that, you know, the fact that I think a lot of us, even when I was growing up, I think I've always been quite an odd one. And I think as you go through a lot of challenges, you start to realize, like I said, whose voice are you listening? Is it people's noise, or is it really truly you? And I think once you're able to identify that, then, yes, there's always walking with fear, but I always wanted to convert it to walking or performing in spite of fear. There's always going to be this fear in you, like, am I doing the right thing? You know, is this the right path? But continue to walk. And the worst thing to happen to you is not taking that step, you know, or just like, okay, I think, someone say I'm stupid to come up with the idea. Okay, I think he's right, right? Accepting someone else's truth. And not the truth, right?
I think those doubts are important to have because they help solidify your argument. If I rewind and say, I'm going to leave the family business, should this be right? Am I an unfilial son? Will the business carry on? Will they survive? These doubts have to be there for me to solidify, okay, yes, they'll be there. The questions are there for me to answer.
Very good, yeah.
So if I can answer them properly, actually they'll survive. And actually I'll be happier. And actually they'll be happier because I won't be wasting their time doing half-hearted work.
Yes.
Okay, thanks to these questions. Yeah. So same thing for going to an ice bath. You think about it, it's bloody scary. Should I really be going into it? It's there to help solidify your argument to eventually go in to say, okay, this doubt of my inner strength is here to help me solidify whether I believe in myself in the first place. And because of that question, I will answer, no, I'm not going in because I'm just too tired. My head is in the wrong space today. And boom, you have an authentic communication with your inner voice that says, don't do it for the sake of everyone being there, cameras and all that. Or the other way around is, I bloody hate the cold. This is my one chance under guidance and supervision to do something. The scariest thing I've ever done. I almost drowned when I was young. And this time, I'm going to put my face into a tub of ice cubes.
Yes.
But there's people surrounding me and supporting me and making sure I'm safe. Yeah. So the doubt would cause me to solidify the fact that actually I'm way stronger than I thought. And this whole situation allowed it to happen, and I come out stronger than I ever felt before, doing something I feared for my entire life. And until now, it proves to me that, oh, I can overcome this. What more can I overcome?
Yeah.
So that amygdala in the brain that's sensing danger, I don't want to trip down the stairs, all that. Yes, it's fear, but we have to embrace it to use it to empower us to say, it's the one thing that keeps me from dying, from crossing the road blindly and being hit by a car, and it's also causing me to have situational awareness and be stronger and be better so I can survive easier in this world.
Yeah.
So I think fear is such a good thing to have and something to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. I always feel that we can never live life without fear. You know, that's where we need to learn to conquer, or even to understand and embrace, right? You use the word embrace fear. So, you know, as a closing, what would you say? I learned so much from Chun today. And in fact, I think there's this need for everybody to go through Wim Hof. Not just, you know, maybe the ice bath, but to also challenge yourself and question yourself. I think that part, like, hey, it's an ice bath, you know, and whether when you are in front of a big group of people who can support you, you're in a safe environment to have that experience. So do it. And I know Wim Hof and even your session is getting more popularity, because I keep saying Chun's name, you know, people are like, hey, have you done this? It's like, oh, of course, I know this guy, you know. I said, please do it. And anyone who asks me about, you know, Wim Hof method, about Chun's sessions, I always say, please go for it. Because I think in the deep down level, we need to have that. I think the hardest person to be with is ourselves, right? Because sometimes even that's why meditation, it's difficult if you were to say, okay, if I were to keep you in this tower for one whole day and not to speak to anybody, the frightening part is not being, you know, it's not just taking your phone away, it's being with yourself and the fear or the things that you're being presented when you're isolated. But today, we have learned so much. Maybe after this, we can see whether we can do a little bit of a breathwork exercise with our audience. But as a closing, what is one message that you would like to leave with our audience?
One message?
Wow. Come on, live life. I think you have a lot of message in our podcast. One key message that that will allow, you know, to allow our audience and our viewers to take away.
I would say, do something that scares you, and you realize that the fear of the activity, it's actually way more scary than actually doing it. And when you finish doing it, you realize, oh, it's actually not that scary. And that has applied to every single thing from bungee, skydiving, snowboarding to different, or diving to a deep place in the sea. The fear of it is so much worse than the actual reality.
Oh, wow.
And so so I would say, try something scary. If holding your breath is scary, and that's the scariest thing you do first thing in the morning, what does the world have for you for the rest of the day that you cannot conquer?
Wow, yes. So, you know, I love that. It's like, you know, I always say L-I-F-E, life, right? So I used to say it's living in fulfillment every day. Now I'm going to change it because of Chun. It's called live in fear every day. And then that's where you live in fear every day. Then you're like, wow, yeah, man. I need to know how to overcome this fear and then conquer fear. Yeah.
If you can scare yourself on your own terms, then when the world throws more fear at you, you're like, come, what's...
Come on,
you can't do anything to me anymore. Yes. I've scared myself shitless this morning already once I woke up.
Yes, so we have learned so much from Chun. Chun, can you share with the viewers where can they find more information about your workshops and all your sessions?
Oh, just look at Wim Hof Method Singapore. I'm operating under Hyperactive, that's the company name, because that's what I started with, Hyperactive. We're gonna go around, do everything, go crazy.
Nice.
And after a while I realized it's all inside. It's all inside. Wow. So it's a very grounding method. We sit down, we breathe, we jump into the cold. You do nothing basically, you just sit around and lie around.
Yeah. Agree.
A lot goes on in the body and the mind.
Don't just think that it's easy, but it was very, very it was very high rated. event that we did with Chun. So I really, really wanted to thank you. And also, thank you for sharing your wisdom. And please do check out Chun's workshop, Wim Hof Method Singapore. And I'm sure you, as a company, or even maybe as a family, whatever it is, to get people involved, because I think Wim Hof Method really do help individual, not just experiencing cold, but helps your mind, help your soul, and helps your body. Until our next Dying to Meet You, we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks,
you.
June. Cheers.
Cheers.
Death has always been a certainty.
That's what I like about Anjali. It has to be a celebration.
Endless topics that we can talk about.
Dying to Meet You.
Welcome to my podcast.